No, sorry, third case. Last one seemed to take more time than it did. Mr. Schmidt, no time to get comfortable.
Like as if anyone could in here.
Morning, Your Honors. Mark Schmidt with the law firm of Godfrey & Kahn on behalf of appellant Johnny Da Silva. Your Honors, the main issue in this case is whether Da Silva's conviction for attempted assault with a dangerous weapon under 18 U.S.C. section 1959 and the related firearms charge, which carries a mandatory 10-year consecutive sentence, should stand. For three reasons, this court should reverse the conviction. First, there is insufficient evidence in the record for a reasonable jury to conclude that Da Silva acted to maintain or increase his position in the Latin Kings.
Can I stop you there? Would you agree that the motive requirement is met if Da Silva committed his crime because he knew it was expected of him by reason of his membership in the gang?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that is the appropriate standard. However, I didn't...
Couldn't a jury properly infer that here?
I don't believe so under the facts of this case, Your Honor. The only thing we know about what occurred here is that one of Mr. Da Silva's associates, a gentleman by the name of Manuel Garcia, who was attending a 4th of July party in a backyard that was adjacent to an alleyway, saw Da Silva pull into the alleyway in a vehicle. He was followed by two other vehicles. At some point, the individuals all exited the vehicles and appeared to be arguing. Garcia then ran towards Da Silva, who got back in his vehicle, and as the two passed in the alleyway, Da Silva uttered six words, "Go light him up at the light." He then left. At that point, Garcia retrieved a handgun that he had hidden under a garbage can, unbeknownst to Da Silva, ran through a few yards, and came to a traffic signal where he fired a single errant shot at a vehicle. He then ran back, hid the gun under the garbage can, and went back to the party. There's no indication, based on anything, that Da Silva felt that there was any threat to his status as a Latin King member. There's no indication even as to what the argument was about. It just simply was an argument.
I thought there was all kinds of contextual evidence mm-hmm. about the people in the other car being rival gang members, inappropriately on the Latin King's turf, and that based on your client's status in a Latin King's organization, it was his obligation to protect that turf and to make sure the gang wasn't being disrespected by the presence of the rival gang members on that turf, and that everybody understood what go light 'em up meant. Certainly Mr. Garcia did, given what he did next. So there was all kinds of contextual evidence that was put in by other witnesses to explain to the jury what was going on.
There certainly were other instances of that implicate Mr. Da Silva being involved with a gang and the fact that the gang had certain things it would do when it felt as if it was threatened. However, I would urge this court to adopt the reasoning of the Second Circuit in the Thai case, in which the individual was a member of a Vietnamese gang called Born to Kill and was apprehended in the process of attempting to bomb a Chinese restaurant. And the Second Circuit held that the mere fact that this gentleman was a member of a gang and the fact that one of the things the gang did was engage in violent activities is insufficient to show that Tai was attempting to maintain or increase his position in the gang. I wouldn't dispute with Your Honor that Mr. Da Silva is a member of the Latin Kings, or that the Latin Kings oftentimes engage in violent and antisocial behavior. However, the question is whether Mr. Da Silva was acting to maintain or increase his position. And based on the very limited record created by the government and the testimony of this single witness, Manuel Garcia, it's just simply insufficient to show that Mr. Da Silva was acting for that purpose under Section 1959.
But don't we have evidence that his duties included, he's not just a member of the Latin Kings. Didn't his duties include enforcement, such as retaliation against other gangs in his, he has that title.
Regional enforcer.
What was his title?
Regional enforcer.
Your Honor's correct, yes.
Regional enforcer.
Your Honor, I would distinguish the situation from one where Mr. De Silva was trying to maintain or increase his position based on this court's recent holding in the Avila case. That involved another Latin King member who received a sentence enhancement for allegedly shooting at someone.
Yeah, but in Avila, there was very, as I recall it, there was very little evidence that Avila was even in a gang, and there was no evidence at all that his duties included enforcement such as, you know, the retaliation. And I think that those are the facts that are critical here.
Your Honor, I think what I took from Avila as being the most important fact in that respect is that the court determined that his motivation for shooting at these individuals, regardless of whether he was a member of the gang, was that it could have been purely personal. And here, the government needed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the element that De Silva acted to maintain or increase his position in the Latin Kings. And based upon the testimony of Mr. Garcia, there's no indication that De Silva was attempting to maintain or increase his position. There are certainly other facts that indicate, yes, he was a member of the Latin Kings, yes, they are a violent gang. However, I think it's a bit of a stretch to conclude that because he was involved in some sort of unspecified and undescribed argument with individuals who are stated to have been members of another gang, although unidentified, that is sufficient to prove that he was attempting to maintain or increase his position.
Well, then how should we factor in the fact that he's the regional enforcer in the area and responsible for maintaining gang security and, you know, that he had ordered retaliatory acts of violence in the past? How should we factor that in?
I wouldn't deny, Your Honor, that Mr. De Silva's gang membership can be seen as a relevant factor with respect to these charges. I mean, he's charged.
No, the fact that he's the regional enforcer. I think that's the critical.
Right. I think that title, actually, the record indicated that he was an enforcer of internal discipline within the gang, that people came to him to ask for permission to be able to undertake certain activities.
And then they were beaten. Oh God, it's a, you know, I mean, if they, he ordered these horrendous beatings. If people, I mean, it's no wonder that someone would leave a party, grab a gun, and run down to the light and shoot if he ordered it, is it? Since he's the, you know, the director of beatings or whatever they're doing there.
I see my time has expired. Thank you.
You don't want to answer me.
I'm happy to if Your Honor would. Essentially, I think the issue of Garcia's position as a junior member within the gang indicates that Garcia may have had a motivation to increase his own position within the gang, but I don't think that it shows that De Silva was acting to increase his maintain or increase his position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Risley.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court and Counsel. The Court has already gotten to the gist of this, which is the context of the events involved surrounding the shooting that is in question here.
Yeah, well, I'm the devil, so isn't it pure speculation that his motive in ordering Garcia to shoot at the vehicle was to maintain his position in the Latin Kings as opposed to revenge against people who had just tried to harm him? In other words, how could a jury know that beyond a reasonable doubt? How could a jury know that beyond a reasonable doubt?
Because it was the only plausible alternative, Your Honor. There isn't any question that in a confrontation of this sort, just like a football player on a field, there's a personal element to the confrontation. But just like a football player on the field, it would be implausible to think that the player believes that his position on the team is unrelated to his performance on the field. There are three things contextually about this shooting, about the event, the confrontation, that in context, because of the circumstances, because of the culture of the gang, the location where the shooting occurred, make this the quintessential gang leader challenge. For the defendant, this was showtime. And those three things are, first of all, the evidence about the culture of the Latin Kings. Second of all, the evidence about the expectations upon the defendant as the regional enforcer, or for that matter, any gang leader. And third, the nature of the location where this happened. Now, dealing with that first, the culture, the gang culture, Darren Galt, who testified as a gang expert, testified that the Latin Kings, like most Hispanic gangs, are a pride-oriented culture. They engage in defending territory, he said, and turf, and often will go to war with another street gang over simple things as disrespecting their gang or their turf or their members. Michael Overa testified, as a former chapter enforcer himself and Inca, or top leader, that when asked if there were any conflicts between the Latin Kings and any other gangs in the area, he said, quote, "I don't know if there was anything personal. It was just because you were from a different neighborhood or a different gang," close quote, and was asked, so if it wasn't personal, what was it? Answer.
Sounds much like the behavior of grizzly bears, actually, and leaving me very happy that grizzly bears are unarmed.
I'm going to assume that is no reference to my name, Risley, Your Honor.
No.
Yes, it is. The Latin Kings, as a pride-oriented territorial culture, the record was replete with evidence about their defense of their territory, which goes to the third point I raised, which was the significance of this location. Was it just accident that when confronted, when being harassed, whatever it was, by these rival gang members, the defendant drove into that alley and stopped right behind the house of Josh Carlson? There was testimony that Josh Carlson's house was, number one, a gang hangout. It was the epicenter of the Latin Kings turf. Number two, Josh Carlson was the chapter enforcer. And number three, this was where the gang kept its firearms to be readily available to defend its members. And now backing up to the second point that I made about the defendant's position and the expectations upon him, Miguel Hurtado testified. Miguel Hurtado was a Latin Kings regional officer. And he testified that regional officers had appointed the defendant, selected him to be the regional enforcer in the Quad Cities, the Moline area. And that the regional enforcer is the chief of security of the whole region and above any other position, including the chapter Inca, which is the highest chapter officer. When he was asked, how is it that you were able to gain a position of influence within the Latin Kings, become a regional officer, he answered, among other things, my standing as a righteous member of the nation. Question, what does it take to be considered a righteous member of the nation? Answer, it takes, basically, never not to be weak. That was reasonable for the jury to infer from the context. The same was expected of the defendant in his position as the regional enforcer, the chief of security over the entire area.
And was the testimony that being chief of security had external implications as well as internal implications?
Well, certainly.
It was not just maintaining internal security among gang members, but also external to rival threats like this one?
Certainly. Protecting your turf is never internal. It's always external. It's protecting it from threats from the outside. And the defendant was responsible not only for security, but for the whole gang. He was the highest-ranking gang officer. So
the testimony was that that was part of the regional enforcer's job.
Certainly, yes. And so here's the defendant, confronted by regional gang members at the epicenter of their turf that he's obligated to defend. His reputation is on the line. And a junior gang member comes up, running up, looking at him, seeking direction. There's an audience. Can you imagine, plausibly, that the defendant would have remained the regional enforcer and maintained his reputation upon which his authority rested if he were to turn to that junior gang member and say, turn the other cheek. Make peace, not war. Let it go. You know, that's ridiculous. He had an obligation as a gang leader and an expectation upon him to behave exactly as he did. It would be implausible to think that such considerations were not even part of his thinking at the time. I will say in this regard that I think it would be prudent to speak in terms of his purpose in doing what he did rather than his motive. There is a distinction between motive and purpose, and I think we need to maintain that. Sometimes the cases blur the two. The remaining arguments all have to do with sentencing enhancements. We've presented our argument that those arguments were waived deliberately by defense counsel because trial counsel told the district court he wanted to raise those before this court. Of course, they're not raised. The arguments that he deemed, apparently, by implication, meritless, are instead. We'll rely upon the brief in that regard. Mm-hmm. If there are no other questions, then we ask that the judgment of the district court include sentence be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Risley. Anything further, Mr. Schmidt?
I'll make two quick points. The government asks, can you imagine why De Silva would not have acted in the way he did? And that's the whole problem here, is that the jury was essentially speculating as to why De Silva may have acted, because there just simply wasn't sufficient evidence based on the testimony of Garcia. Secondly, in addition to this lack of evidence and the error that's present there, I'd like to bring to the court's attention the fact that the prosecutor made two improper statements during its closing argument about Mr. De Silva. First, the prosecutor improperly exhorted the jury to convict De Silva in order to, quote-unquote, send a message to other criminals who were obviously not on trial. And secondly, the prosecutor insisted that the jury had a duty to, quote, protect the community from violent gang members by convicting De Silva. Those comments were improper, and on top of the lack of evidence, they unfairly prejudiced the jury in favor of the government and led to an improper conviction. In sum, De Silva asks that the court reverse his conviction with respect to counts 2 and 3 and remand for resentencing consistent with the arguments in the brief. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Schmidt. And Mr. Schmidt, we appreciate your willingness and that of your firm to accept the appointment in this case, and the assistance you've been both to your client and the court. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is taken.